Well, good morning. If you do have a Bible, turn to Ephesians 6, and we're going to be continuing our study in Ephesians, and we're going to be focusing in particular on Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. And you know, last week, Marcus obviously taught Ephesians 6, 1, but I'm going to make some brief reference to that, and then we're primarily going to focus on the second and the third verse. And we're going to be seeking to answer the question, how do I honor my father and mother? So that'll be the question that governs our time here today, and that'll be the question that we'll be seeking to provide answers to as we're trying to do justice to what's in the passage today. So Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with the promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Now, it's difficult to think of a more controversial topic today than the topic of honoring father and mother. What I mean by that is not that most people are in principle opposed to that idea, but then when you look around the world that we actually live in today, it is one of these concepts that it's very difficult to see examples of people actually doing this in real life. In fact, when you think about the topic of honoring father and mother, it seems like we're living in a society that disrespects our elders in almost every way imaginable. We have slurs that we use against old people. Right now, it's currently popular for people to criticize boomers, you know, using the word boomer as a pejorative, almost as if that's a slur. And so you see a lot of young people who, you know, perhaps they may have some legitimate critiques against certain characteristics of, you know, former generations, but then they point those things out in a way that's entirely disrespectful. I mean, if you think about like the standard children's show that you're going to watch today, and you know, if you're a parent, you've probably seen a lot of these shows, but if you're not, then maybe you've been mercifully spared from them. But I mean, you could think about, you know, former times in your life where you did watch shows along those lines. Think about any Disney movie that you've ever watched, and basically the plot of every Disney movie, every, you know, kids show is that the kids know everything, right? So the kids know everything, and the parents are basically idiots. That's kind of the plot of every show. And then what the kids do is they, you know, they have to reject their father and mother's wisdom, and that's the central plot of most of your kids' shows, kids' movies, is the kid is rejecting the father and mother's wisdom throughout the whole thing. And then at the very end, the parents come around and realize that the kids really knew what was best for everyone after all. And so that's basically the story that we're told over and over again. And you live in a time that's just so filled with disrespect. I thought that growing up, in the time that I grew up in, I thought that it was pretty disrespectful then, right? But then you look at the thing, you look at the state of affairs today, and it's way over the top. I mean, the major premise of shows we watched growing up was there was still like the concept of the TV dad or something like that, right? There's the concept of the TV dad who was somewhat in charge of the family a little bit maybe, and then he would give his wisdom to the children at particular times. You know, so a lot of the shows we watched growing up, that's the plot that would happen. You would have, you know, the sitcom or whatever, and at the end of it, the dad would give the moral lecture at the end of it that everyone was supposed to listen to. But I mean, that kind of thing doesn't happen anymore. Like, we're living in a different world today. And, today what we're living in, the kind of world where disrespect is basically the currency that we traffic in across the board. And it's there's no, you know, area where it's more pronounced than in the subject of disrespect towards our elders, disrespect towards our father and mother. And so we're going to be saying a few words here today about how to honor father and mother during our time here today as we're looking at what's happening in Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Now, the first thing that we need to think about when we're thinking about this concept of honoring father and mother is we need to think about the concept of obedience. And I'm really not going to belabor this point at all, except for to explain how verse 1 relates to verse 2 and 3, because Marcus talked about this to great length last week. So if we were to think about, well, how do I honor my father and mother? Well, the first thing that we need to be thinking about is obeying them. And that's how the passage starts. So children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. Now, as I said, Marcus spent a lot of time talking about this, but then In order to really understand where we go from here, you have to think about where we've been, right? So the passage says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And you're meant to ask the question, well, how do I know that's right? So Paul is saying it's right. And that means it's right because Paul is speaking the very words of God. But then if you're following the argument that's actually happening here in the passage, Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then he gives you the grounding for the statement that he's making. So this is not something that he's just making up on the spot. When you come to Ephesians 6, you're not coming to the first time this concept has ever been taught in the Bible at all. There's a lot of revelation, essentially, that has come before this. And what Paul is doing when he's saying, children, obey the Lord, for this is right, is he's going to provide the grounding for why that's actually true, okay? So, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. How do we know this is right? Because that's what the law says, okay? That's Paul's point. We know that children obeying their parents in the Lord is right because the law says, honor your father and mother. And, you know, Paul says, note, like, this is like a parenthetical remark. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the earth. So Paul establishes the importance of children obeying their parents from what you actually find in the law, which in the law it says, honor your father and mother. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the idea here is just to say that this idea of honoring your father or mother in the first instance involves obeying them. That's part of the significance of what the command in the Ten Commandments actually meant. So when this command was given in the first instance, part of what it means to honor your father and mother is to actually obey them. Marcus, obviously, he spent a lot of time talking about that last week. We're not going to reinvent the wheel with all that. But what I want to do with our time here today is talk about some of the other things that this command, honor your father and mother, entailed when it was originally given besides obedience. And then I want to talk about how that all connects with what's happening here in this passage itself. So, you know, if you're trying to answer the question, how do I honor my father and mother? Well, in the first instance, you obey them. And then in the second instance, what you're going to do is you're going to revere them. So as I said, this word honor father and mother has broader significance than obedience. So the way you understand it is it's not less than obedience, but then it's more than that, okay? And so we're going to talk about some of the ways in which it's more than that. And in the first, like second point for our purposes is to revere them, but that's the first kind of thing that you can say about what this command means in the broader sense of just pure obedience. So Ephesians 6:2 starts with the word honor, and that word in the Greek is the word timao, and this is actually is interesting because this is where my name comes from. So my name is Timothy, and in the Greek that means it's a compound word, timao, meaning to honor, and then theos, meaning God. So my name essentially means honoring God. Now, hopefully, by God's grace, I could live up to that in some sense. You know, I think there's plenty of times where I don't. But, you know, maybe my parents named me, and hopefully they had that in mind when they put it on. But, like, when they gave me that name. But the issue is to say that, like, this word tamao means honoring or it means to revere. Now, you know, tamao is an idea of, it has two primary senses, okay? So this word has two primary senses. First is to set a price on something, to estimate it or to value it. So when you're thinking about the idea of what does it mean to honor someone, you should be thinking in terms of like setting a price on it or valuing something. Now, when you think about it that way, like this is in a certain sense, it's like a monetary word, and it shows up in the Bible in a wide variety of places indicating this very thing. So when you read through the Bible, you see like commands that are given as it relates to a church providing for elders. It says, you know, let the elders who rule well be worthy of double honor. That means double like payment, double price, double value, double estimation. Like when the Bible talks about like honoring widows in the Bible, you honor widows who are real widows. Like the idea there is also providing for them and caring for them and value, like you're valuing them and then you're taking care of them, if that makes sense. So meaning you're to enroll, like, you're not to enroll younger widows in, you know, the care of the church, but you're going to enroll older widows who meet certain kind of qualifications, because within that, there's this idea, like, this idea of valuing. Now, when we look at this passage in this context, the primary significance of this idea of honoring father and mother is to show high regard for or to revere, okay? And so that's what we're talking about, revering them, to show high honor, to revere them. Now, I mean, when we grew up, I mean, we used to have a little bit better understanding of some of these things, even though they were completely distorted, you know, in certain ways. But what I mean is just to say that, like, growing up, there was this concept, and I'm not going to give you a list of mom jokes, but there was a concept of the mom joke that we told growing up. And, you know, growing up, it was one of those funny things, because, you know, it's a little bit of a, it's one of those things where you tell the mom joke, and then the person gets, like, outrageously offended by the fact that you told the mom joke, and you know that you're playing a little bit of game with this, but then people would get real, like, you don't, whatever you do, you don't insult my mom, right? Like, don't nobody talk about my mama like that. But then, like, you think about that along those lines, where does that come from? Where does this idea of, hey, you don't insult my mom come from? Because if everyone knows, like, in a certain sense, that it's all play and it's all pretend, why would everyone get so offended by it? Now, I don't know that most people would even get offended by it at all. You'd probably just join in and insult your mom with them at this point, right? And so, and I don't think anyone, like, even cares anymore like we used to, but, like, we used to actually care about that. And you know, it used to be the kind of thing that you talk about someone's mom, that, you know, them's be fighting words or something like that. You may go to blows. Or something along those lines. But then the reason why that would happen is because we used to have a little bit better of an understanding of what respect is than we do it now currently. And so, like, the idea, like, when you, if you're to honor someone, you're to revere someone, one of the things that that means is that you don't actually make fun of them. Like, there are rules for peer relationships. Like meaning, like, there are things that, like, the Bible doesn't have, like, a one-size-fits-all kind of communication that you're supposed to implant into, like, every single relationship you find yourself in and every single kind of encounter that you find themselves in. And I mean, the Bible has different standards of communication for men as it relates to men. The Bible has different standards of communication of how a man is supposed to talk to a woman even, right? So the Bible, like, the Bible will instruct husbands not to treat their wives harshly in a way that, like, there are no rules like that, like, in the same kind of way as it relates to men talking to men. But there are particular rules about how you, as a man, you should talk to a woman in that kind of way. But then, as it relates to the concept of respect, here's the point. I mean, there are rules on how you, like, as a young person, you should talk to an old person. So the Bible would say, don't sharply rebuke an older man. Like, don't sharply rebuke an older man. Why would it say that? Well, because, like, there's this idea, like, of honoring. There's this idea of revering, meaning, like there is, you have a different standard of communication that you should have as it relates to all authority figures, right? So whenever you think about, like, any authority relationship in the Bible, when someone is in authority over another person in some sense, like, there's a set of rules that apply to all those instances throughout the Bible, okay? So meaning, like, why are wives told uniquely to respect their husbands? Like, we don't even know why that's the case. Why is a wife, like, why are those the specific instructions given to a wife? Shouldn't a husband respect his wife? Well, yeah, I mean, but he should show her respect as if she's a person, but he's not showing her the respect of a lower person in rank to a higher person in rank. You understand? And so there are rules to authority relationships that show up in this passage. They show up in every single passage. So in every situation you find yourself in the Bible where you're looking at an individual under the authority of another individual, what comes to, like, the language of the biblical writers first is this idea of respect. And the idea of respect means you don't boss around someone who's in authority over you, right? So, like, if my kid were to look at me and say, get the milk, Dad, right? Like, you can't, like, that isn't the way authority relationships work. Like, you may say that to a peer, hey, go get me the milk, you know, and see what happens or whatever, but you don't say that to your dad. So, like, the issue is, with authority relationships, commands go down the authority ladder, requests go up, and you don't tease, like, your dad in the same way that you may tease your brother. So, I mean, think about, like, what happens with Noah when Noah got drunk with the wine and he lay uncovered or whatever, and his sons see him. Ham wants to make a sport of him, wants to make a joke about it, And what did Shem and Japheth do? They wouldn't even look at their father's nakedness. They walk backwards and cover them up because they're trying to cover his shame. And so like the idea of revering someone is the idea of showing them respect. And that means like you don't make a spectacle of them. You don't make a sport of them. There's different ways that you talk to them. When you talk to them, you approach them in a way, like not as a peer-to-peer kind of relationship. You don't approach them as a way where you're going to be condescending and you're going to talk down to them. You approach them with care carefulness, and that's going to show up and reflect in the way that your words even come out of your mouth. So how do I honor my father and mother? First, you obey them. Second, you revere them. Third, you care for them and you provide for them, okay? So you care for them and you provide for him. 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and he is worse than an unbeliever. I'm going to read a few verses here related to this. 1 Timothy 5:4, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents. It says, make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. Proverbs 23:22, listen to your father who gave you life and do not despise your mother when she's old. Okay? John, like a good example of this in the Bible of caring for them, providing for them, is John 19:25, when Jesus was on the cross. John 19:25, it says, but standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. So what you have even there is you have an example of Jesus looking at his mom on the cross, his mother on the cross, the woman who gave him life, the woman who raised him, the woman who cared for him and provided for him. And he knows he is coming to a situation where in his human, you know, body, he's not going to be providing for her, be able to care for her anymore. And like as a feature of what happens on the cross, he looks over at the disciple whom he loved and he said, it's your responsibility to care for her now, because I can't anymore. And so when you think about this, like within this idea of honoring your father and mother, there is this idea, and I've given some verses to establish this, there is this idea of caring for them and providing for them, which is only natural considering the nature of the relationship that they have to you. So, and I think that, you know, this is one of those things that when you're a child and when you're a kid, I mean, kids in the room, you should listen and pay attention to this, because this is probably not something that you really even think about. And it's something that often you start to think about more once you actually have kids, okay? Once you actually have kids. And, you know, it may be convenient that you think about it more when you actually start to have kids, because now you realize all the things that you didn't realize, and now all of a sudden it becomes a priority to you in the way that it wasn't before. But then, you know, if you want to get a head start, you may want to try to think about these things ahead of time. You know, if you're a child in the room, how do you think that you came to exist, and how do you think that you live, right? So one of the things that happens, like when you're a dad, like I remember growing up, and my dad would care about like things that seemed to be strange to me at the time. You know, so he'd ask me to do things like turn off the lights and. And you would think, oh, well, who cares? You know, it's just a light or whatever. And like, you know, you're thinking about it like a kid thinks about those kind of things, because you don't know what it costs to run those lights, right? And then, you know, dad would say things like, you know, shut the door. Don't let all the cold air out. And why would he say that? Well, because he was the only one in the house who had the unique responsibility of paying those power bills every month, right? I didn't have to pay those power bills. I didn't have to go to work every day. I didn't have to go to work 40 hours a day, or 40, 50, 60 hours a week or whatever. I didn't have to do that in order to provide for all this stuff. So, I mean, being a dad means that like the issue is you have human beings that you brought into the world that you have a responsibility to figure out how to feed every day. And you have a responsibility to put clothes on every day. You know, and as a kid, I mean, you may think, well, I wish I had nicer clothes. I wish I had, you know, more stuff. I wish I had more toys. And why can't we just go out to eat all the time? Like, I want to go out to eat all the time. Or why can't we do this? And why can't we do that? And, you know, why do I only get presents on, you know, my birthday and Christmas or whatever else? Why can't I get presents every day of the year? And the issue is that you don't understand what it costs to keep you alive. And you don't understand what it costs to pay all these bills. And you don't understand like how much work has to go into all this. And then you don't understand what happens when, you know, dad loses his job and doesn't, you know, have the ability to, like, you don't have to bear any of those burdens. You could be a kid and you get to play all day long, you know? And so you don't have to bear those burdens. You don't have to bear those responsibilities. And you think you're probably being uniquely oppressed when your parents ask you to go outside and rake the lawn for a little bit, you know? But then that's nothing. Like, you have to understand, like, that's nothing compared to like what it takes to actually provide for you. But then, you know, you add that up over the course of life. And most children aren't thinking this way. You think about all the money it took and all the work it took to provide you a childhood, to provide you a roof over your head, to provide you life. I mean, like, as a kid, you don't even remember what it was like to have to change your own diapers, right? You don't remember all that. You don't remember your parents waking up in the middle of the night because you threw up all over your room. And not only you, but your brothers threw up all over the room, and then someone had to clean that mess up. You know, you don't remember all those things, but then God, like, the point is, God does. God remembers those things, and like, not only does God like remember those things, like, that's the way He designed it. He designed it, and He designed you to come to life in such a way that God would He would make you like a small, little, tiny, helpless thing. Like, not like a small, tiny, helpless, needy thing, right, who needed attention every few hours and kept your mom sleep deprived for the first 6 months of her life. Like, God made you in such a way that that you would come into the world offering nothing to your parents whatsoever, like in terms of like financial benefit or value. Like, you don't even carry your own, right? You don't carry your own weight. You spend the first 5 years of your life not really being able to contribute anything tangible or material to the family. You don't help with the workload in almost any way whatsoever, right? You come into the family in such a way that you're the beneficiary of a lot of sacrifice and a lot of work from people that that like sacrifice to bring you into the world. And so, like, the idea of honoring your father and mother is to think about those things in your mind, like, and to retain those things in your mind, and realize that there's a debt that you owe your parents. Like, there's a debt, like there's a real debt that you owe them. Meaning, like, they've done so many things for you that you take for granted, that you're not grateful for, that you didn't deserve. Like, even the worst, even the worst kind of parents. They still somehow manage to keep you alive, if you're alive. They somehow manage to keep you alive, you know, for as long as they do. Like, I mean, and provide all, like, you know, is with whatever failings your parents actually have. I mean, like, the issue is they somehow manage to keep you alive and keep you going and give you food and give you shelter and give you clothing, everything else. And you just, like, there is this sense in which if you're going to honor your father and mother, you realize all these things that they've done for you that you've probably taken for granted. And there's going to come a time where the roles are going to be reversed, where they're going to need you to take care of them. And part of the way you should even be thinking about how you're governing your life is you should be thinking about, from a very early age, I need to be making the kind of decisions today. Like, I need to be making the kind of decisions as a young man going into college, like I are whatever it is that I'm doing after high school, I need to be making the kind of decisions that are going to put me in the best possible situation to take care of my parents when they need me to take care of them, right? Like, I'm going to be making those kind of decisions and not just saying, hey, I'm just going to go about like being irresponsible, living my life, and, you know, throw them in a nursing home or whatever, they get abused by people or whatever else. You know, I'm not necessarily commenting on like that in one way or another, but there's a lot of situations in which people haven't prepared themselves to repay their parents, right? So like in the situation right where I listed before, 1 Timothy 5:4, if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first show godliness to their own household and make some return on their parents. Like, the Bible expects that you make some return on your parents' investment towards you in life, meaning they cared for you, and there's going to come a time where you're going to need to care for them, and you ought to be planning your life in such a way that you're ready to do that. So, as we said, how do I honor my father and mother? First, you obey them. Second, you revere them. Third, you care for them and provide for them. Fourth, you seek their counsel. So, I mean, there's a lot of verses that are related to this, and you know, the whole book of Proverbs. I mean, you could read the whole book. I could read the whole book of Proverbs at this point, and I'm probably not going to do that. But I'll read a few. But Proverbs 15:5: A fool despises his father's instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is prudent. Proverbs 13:1: A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. As you read through the book of Proverbs, one of the things you're going to find is you're going to see that it opens up with this, like these words, like that children are supposed to listen to their parents, heed their parents' instructions, and then a foolish son is going to be the one who despises his father's instruction, and the wise son is going to be the one who hears his father's instruction. And part of honoring your father and mother is to realize that they've been here a little bit longer than you have. They know a few things that you don't know, right? Like that you've forgotten. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you look back on your life, and I'm 42 right now. So to some of you in the room, that seems like really young. And to some of you, that seems like really old, right? But like the thing is, I can look back on myself. I'm middle-aged, right? So I can look back on myself 10 years ago and think, man, I was stupid, right? But then if I were to, you back it up, you know, 20 years ago, and I think about how I was as a person in my early 20s, it gets even more embarrassing, right, to think about that. And but then you back it up 30 years, or you know, when I was, you know, 12, when I was my early teenager, going into my teenage, I mean, we were dumb, you know. We have video evidence of it. You know, like we still have video evidence of it. I mean, like just thinking about all the things that we did we could have killed each other with some of the stuff that we did. I mean, boys are worse than, you know, women at this point because they have excess testosterone and they're trying to get it out of their system. But I mean, I'm surprised we're alive with some of the stuff. My mom used to say that she would stay inside the house and not watch us play outside because it was too stressful for her, okay? So, I mean, just think about things like along those lines, but then, like, the issue is when you're young, you know, and kids in the room, you should pay attention to this, you think you know everything. Like, you think you know, you'll argue with your parents in complete and total utter ignorance, like having no idea that what you said didn't make any sense at all. But it made sense to you. Like, it made sense to you, and you thought it was right. And you thought your parents didn't know anything, but I mean, like the issue is the longer you live, the more you understand the way the world works. You understand how the world works. You understand, I mean, you should. But I mean, like, the issue is even the most unrighteous person and even the most foolish person, there are certain lessons that you can't help but learn, you know, over the course of your life. And so, like the issue is there's a lot of things that you've learned over the course of your life. You know, every time my dad, or every time my car breaks down, you know what I do? I call my dad and I say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, there's a lot of things that I instantaneously go, hey, dad, what do you think about this kind of situation? I want to hear what you have to say about this because, I mean, I do that today. I do that today because I realize that he's lived a little bit longer than me, and he might have encountered certain situations I haven't encountered. And I will say that a lot of, like, almost every single time I ask him, he will point out something that I haven't thought about a particular situation. And that's what happens. I mean, that's what the Bible means when it says that wisdom comes with the ages. And there is a kind of wisdom of life experience that you can have. Even if your parents are not believers, even if they're not Christians, there's a kind of wisdom of life experience where your parents understand certain things that you don't understand. And like wisdom, like if you want to understand what wisdom is, wisdom really is about pattern recognition. That's what wisdom is about. As you read through the Proverbs, one of the things you're going to see is Proverbs are generalities. They're statements of general truth. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Like you think about like a slack hand leads to poverty. Like there's all these principles that are in the Bible that are these generalities. They're statements of general truth that obviously admit exceptions in certain ways. They're not meant to be taken as absolute laws. But like what wisdom is wisdom is the ability to discern patterns, right? If you don't save up your money, you're going to be broke. And what's going to happen when something really bad happens is you're not going to have any money to pay for it. That's the way life works. You know, so you have a person who's lived on the earth a little bit and realizes that, yeah, you know what? It's not the wisest thing in the world to live paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. It's not the wisest thing in the world to spend all of your money every single week on whatever it is that you want. Because rainy days happen. Like, it's not a matter of when, like, if a rainy day is going to happen. It's a matter of, like, when is it going to happen? You know, how often is it going to happen? And so there's, like, these lessons of life experience that come with those who are older. And the Bible says that one of the ways you honor your father and mother is you don't despise their instruction. You heed their counsel. You heed their wisdom. You should actively be seeking their counsel and actively seeking their wisdom. So as we said, you know, how do I honor father and mother, obey them, revere them, care for them, provide for them, seek their counsel? And then this fifth point here is you honor each parent according to their distinct role. So notice what it says here, honor your father and your mother. Why does it say it like that? Why does it say father and mother? Why doesn't it say mother and father? Why is father always come first in these kind of things? You think about that? Like, those things are significant. You should think about that. Why does it say honor your father and honor your mother? Well, the reason why is because each of your parents have a distinct role. When you honor your father, you're honoring your father as a father. When you're honoring your mother, you're honoring your mother as a mother. Like, you're honoring them. And there's a sense in which both of that's the same, but then there's also a sense in which it's different. You're honoring them according to who God made them to be and the position that God has put them in your life. So Vivian was looking at Elizabeth the other day, and she wanted Elizabeth to let her do something that she knew I didn't want her to do, okay? So Vivian was trying to persuade her to do that, and so Vivian looked at Elizabeth, and she was like, you know, like, both you and Daddy are our boss, and so you're my, Dad's my boss, and you're my boss, but you know, you can tell me I'm allowed to do this because you're my boss too, right? And so she was trying to negotiate with her. But then Elizabeth, I mean, she looked at her and she said, do you know that Daddy is Mommy's boss? She's like, no, he's not. Daddy's Mommy's boss. I'm your boss, but Daddy's Mommy's boss and Daddy's your boss. And so if Daddy says something, we're not allowed to, you know, we're not allowed to go against what Dad says here, but like the issue is like you look at this verse here. There is a particular order there. You honor your father and mother because God's given you certain roles and designed certain roles. And I mean, I try to teach people. I even try to teach my kids to think about it along those lines. And these are things that are just our culture is actively hostile to. So when we talk about going to the parents' house, I try to train them every time when they say, "Hey, let's." Let's go to Mimi's house. It's like, no, let's go to G-Daddy's and Mimi's house. You know, let's say it in that kind of order. It's G-Daddy and Mimi's house. It's not Mimi's house. We're going to go to G-Daddy and Mimi's house because I'm trying to teach them to think about like the way that roles actually work. And God does this for a reason. That's the way it shows up in the Bible because like these things are significant. You're honoring each parent according to their role. You're honoring your father as a father and all that entails. You're honoring your mother as a mother. And all that entails. So you're seeking their counsel, you're honoring each parent according to their distinct role, and you're understanding the uniqueness of the command. So notice how this is the first command with the promise. As you read through the Ten Commandments, like one of the things you're going to find is this is, you know, within the list of the Ten Commandments, the legislation to Moses. This, like the Ten Commandments, if you want to understand what's actually happening with the Ten Commandments, this is like there's a covenant that's being made with Yahweh and the people of Israel. And this is the head of the document, meaning in some sense, like the Ten Commandments, what they are is they're a summary of that covenant. So you're going to get a lot of legislation that comes after that in Exodus 20. But this is like the head of the document. This is the summary of it, okay? And so when you're thinking about the Ten Commandments, these commandments are meant to summarize the law. That's what they're meant to do. They're meant to be a summary of it all. And so as you're reading through the law, one of the things you're going to find is, like, all the commands that you're going to find, in some sense, connect with one of the Ten Commandments in that way, because this is meant to be a summary of the law. And then when you're reading through the Ten Commandments, here's the issue. Like, this is the first command in the Ten Commands with a promise, and that tells you something about its importance, okay? So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to understand the uniqueness of this command, and I'm going to describe the uniqueness of this command, and it'll make sense in a minute. But in order to do that, you might want to go to Deuteronomy, okay? You may want to go to Deuteronomy for a second. And we're going to read a little bit in Deuteronomy 6, and then we're going to read a little bit in Deuteronomy 30, and we're going to talk about what this actually means. So God created, the human race, and God decided to reveal himself to Abraham, and he makes a particular covenant with Abraham. It was known as the Abrahamic covenant. So God looks at Abraham. He takes him out of the Ur of the Chaldeans. He says, I want you to go towards the promised land. I'm going to make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sea, or the stars in the heaven, you know, the sand that's on the seashore. Abraham doesn't have any kids, you know, at that time, and his wife's old. And so, but God's making these promises. I'm going to bless those who bless you. To him who dishonors you, I'm going to curse. God makes promises to Abraham, and like he determines to bless him, and that blessing is passed from Abraham to Isaac, to Jacob, who gets renamed to Israel by God. And so, like, Israel is now in, like, the issue is Israel's been enslaved in Egypt at this point for 400 years. God's just brought them out of Egypt with a mighty hand, with signs and wonders and miraculous things. And, you know, he's given them the law at this point. And so Deuteronomy is like the second giving of the law. And so when you come to Deuteronomy 6, here's what you read. Now, this is the commandment, the statutes, the rules that the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going to possess. So Israel's coming out of Egypt and going into the promised land to possess the promised land. Right? They're going to conquer nations that are larger and mightier than them. God's going to give them like houses and lands and properties they haven't even worked for. And he's doing this not because of their righteousness, but because of the wickedness of this nation and because of the promise he made to Abraham. So he says, now this is the commandment, Deuteronomy 6, the statutes, the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your sons and your sons' sons, by keeping all the statutes and commandments which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. You know, notice that. And that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, your God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and all your soul, and all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gate. So God is saying, hey, I've given you this law. I've given you this law. I brought you out of Egypt with signs and wonders and miraculous gifts. I'm going to bring you into the promised land, and I've given you these commands, and these commands are going to be life to you. If you obey these commands, like this is the logic of the Old Testament, your time in the land is going to be long, and your days of life are going to be lengthened. But if you disobey, there's going to be consequences. So Deuteronomy 30:15, see, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today by loving the Lord your God and walking in his ways and keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. But if your heart turns away and you do not hear, but you are drawn away to worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are going over the Jordan to enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life, that you and your offspring may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice, holding fast to him, for he is your life and your length of days, and you may dwell in the land the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, to give to them. So notice there's two paths that are before the Israelites. There's the path of life and blessing, and there's the path of cursing and death. And how are they going to know to follow this path? How are they going to know? Like the issue is, who's responsible to tell the next generation all the wonders that God did for them in Egypt, bringing them out of the promised land with a mighty hand, humbling like the greatest superpower that existed at that time, bringing it to utter ruin, causing the Israelites to plunder the Egyptians. Who's going to relay all this information to the next generation? Who's it going to be, right? You shall teach them diligently to your children. You should talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and gate. Understand the uniqueness of the command. Like, here's the thing. How do we know what we know? The only reason we know anything, like you think about this in the broad sense. How do you know what you know? You know what you know because there were people who existed before you, right? There were people who existed before you who taught you what you know. Like, even if you're searching on the internet or, you know, asking ChatGPT or whatever, where's ChatGPT getting the information from? Where's Google getting that information from? You know, like, they're getting it like from people who walked before. So you think about this, like Adam and Eve were put into the world, and Adam and Eve, functionally, they didn't really have any parents, did they? I mean, God is a parent, but I mean, like the issue is they didn't have anyone, like they had to learn everything basically from scratch. You understand? Like everything. Like how to care for themselves, they were doing it for the first time, right? So Eve, like if you feel like you're, you know, maybe your mother, you didn't have a mother in your life or whatever else, Eve didn't have a mother in her life. Adam didn't have a father in his life, right? They were learning it for the first time, but everyone after them benefited from the things that they learned. Do you understand? So everyone who lived after Adam and Eve got to take at least a good part of what Adam and Eve had, absorb that, take that into their brain, and then learn new things, right? So then, yeah, they're obviously learning new things, and then they're passing those things along to our children. Why do you think that we exist in the way that we exist today? I mean, why is there air conditioning? Do you know how to, I mean, could you just like, could you sit there and like take a bunch of scrap metal and make an air conditioner from scratch? Could you make an air conditioner from scratch? And then could you make like an electric generator to run that air conditioner from scratch by yourself, right? Like think about all the things that are even in this room today. Like could you do it all from scratch? No, I mean you can't. Like you can only do a little part of a little of something. You see what I'm saying? Like the issue is we exist today and we are standing on the shoulders of giants. We're standing on the shoulders of years and years and years of pooled knowledge to get to a point to where now we have little machines in our pocket that you couldn't reproduce if you tried, right? Somehow these things exist and they can, you know, they used to just be able to take pictures for some reason, which was a little bit random, and, you know, maybe send messages to people and make phone calls or whatever. But I mean, like, the thing is, like, everything you see in this room exists because information has been passed from one generation from other generation, and it keeps on improving, getting better and better and better. And why am I belaboring that point? Why am I saying all that? Understand the uniqueness of the command. This is a first command with a promise, honor your father and mother. Why is that important? Well, because they've lived before you, right? They've learned a bunch of stuff that you don't know. If folly is bound up in the heart of a child, like the issue is like they've learned a bunch of stuff that you didn't know. Right? And they're going to try to give that stuff to you. And you're going to try to fight it, you know, as a child. You'll fight it your whole childhood when all they're really trying to do is keep you alive and keep you from killing yourself and maybe strangling your brothers and sisters to death and destroying everything in the house, right? And you'll wonder, like, why all that's happening. But, like, the issue is, like, in this first instance, this is the first command with the promise, like those things are all true in the physical realm, but then you think about these things in the spiritual realm. Your fathers and mothers, like In most instances, most people who come to faith, they come to faith because their father and mother taught them the Bible. They taught them the things about God that came before. They came before them in order to teach them the things about God. Like, we only know what we know because there's been a long generations of fathers and mothers passing down this same thing that was passed, that God told the Israelites to pass down. Now, did the Israelites pass it down perfectly from each generation to generation? No, but was it passed down? Yes, and we are benefited from that, right? So in the first instance, when this command was given within the law, honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land that your Lord your God has given. That was to be understood in a certain context. But then, you know, point seven, this is now going to be applied to Christians in a bit of a different way. So embrace the promise of longevity, that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the earth. That's what Paul says. So that it may go well with you and live long on the earth. Notice what's submitted. So Exodus 20, 12, where this comes from, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. That part of where the Lord your God is giving you is the part that's left out. And Paul is basically saying, hey, this has a different kind of application to Christians who are not living under the Mosaic covenant, but it has more of a primary application, which is that it may go well with you, that you may live long on the earth. So when you're thinking about what this actually means, how do you honor your father and mother? You embrace this promise of longevity, meaning you have to understand that God has created you. He's put you in this world. He's told you to honor your parents, honor people who are older than you. And I've tried to give you some sort of understanding about why that all makes sense, but there's a promise, like the issue is there's a promise that comes with doing this, that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And I mean, this is just true for so many different reasons. This is true in a literal sense. So, you know, within the law, Deuteronomy 21:18, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or mother, and though they discipline him, he will not listen to them, then the father and mother shall take hold of him, bring him to the elders of the city at the gate in the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of the city, our son is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones, so you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. I mean, there were consequences to being a stubborn or rebellious son within the old covenant. Even like it was taken so seriously, you could even be put to death if you refused to honor your father and mother in that kind of way. But then like there are, like as I've been trying to say, I mean, there are obviously like principles of life that are going to be found within your parents' instruction. So Proverbs 3:1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments for length of days and years of life and peace. They will add to you. Like the issue is that your parents have been around for a long time, and if you listen to them, I mean, they could literally keep you from doing something and killing yourself. I mean, like think about it. Like, don't play in the street, kids. You know, in that way, you don't understand why. You know, you don't understand why that you're being told that. But I mean, like, there's like literal truth here that can be said in that kind of way. Like when your parents are warning you against, like, you know, bad friendships, when they're warning you against destructive habits like drugs and everything else, like, I mean, like, this could literally be a means of life to you to heed their instruction, because they've been there and done that, seen what's happened with all the, you know, they've had friends who have gone down that road. They can warn you about all sorts of dangers that you don't see. And so when you're thinking about this promise of longevity, it's obviously not like an absolute promise. So I mean, it's obviously not like this is meant to be given in the language of wisdom. And the language of wisdom is the language of generality. But let me give you a quote here. So New Testament commentator Thielman states, Paul envisioned an audience of children gathered in house churches where his letter would be read aloud and whom he addressed directly. Therefore, avoided subtleties and simply recalled to their minds a commandment that many of them had probably learned from heart. Ephesians was written in a world where between 39 and 50% of the children died before their 10th birthday. The rates were so high that excessive mourning over a child's death was thought to be in poor taste. Everyone would be aware that many well-behaved children succumb to untimely deaths, but for most people would also know that provided they escaped disease and accident, Children who took to heart the wisdom of those who cared for them had a better chance of doing well and living long in life than those who despised their father and mother's instruction. Like, meaning, like, God's designed the world in such a way that you're going to be benefited from honoring your father and mother in all sorts of ways in which you don't understand. I mean, so some of those benefits are obviously going to be like the benefits that come from gaining that life experience that you're so sorely missing. So part of it's that, where it's just like a natural cause and effect. Like, if you listen to your parents and the things that they're really concerned about, they probably indicates that, like, maybe you could actually avoid all the mistakes that they avoided in their life. You know, it's funny. My younger brother is probably like one of my greatest disciples or whatever. When he was thinking about getting married and starting off his life, he would listen to whatever I would say, and I would tell him to do, like, I would tell him all the lessons I learned, and he didn't do any of the stupid things that I did in my life, and his life has gone so much better than mine, you know? Like, I mean, I basically did everything the hard way, and then told him, don't do it that way, and he listened, and he's done everything the easy way, and his life has been, like, exponentially easier than mine, you know? In some sense, Marcus agrees. I'm tempted to be envious of how his life has gone, you know, because of everything else. But I mean, it's just like, you think about that. I mean, your parents can really help you. They can really help you to avoid a lot of the mistakes that they make. But oftentimes, like, you get resentful and you get bitter and you think you know better than them, and pride and arrogance and everything else. And what ends up happening is you guys are just living in a cycle of doing the same thing over and over again from generation to generation, everyone being too stubborn to learn the lessons that you need to learn. So obviously there's truth to it in that kind of way, like in the sense of a natural cause and effect kind of thing. But there's more to it than that. I mean, God's the one who sees. Like, this isn't just a matter of, there are times where you honor your father and mother and you do things the right way, and God can, you know, the same God who created the heavens and the earth, he can feed the 5,000, right? He can cause manna to come down from heaven. He can cause water to come from a rock. That kind of God is the God who's saying, honor your father and mother that it may go well with you, that your days may be long in the earth. Meaning, like, there are blessings that God has in this life and in the next, right? And so, like, a lot of people make a big deal about that your life may be long in the earth. That points to spiritual realities. It does point to spiritual realities. It also, you know, as I'm trying to say, it points to physical realities. Meaning, there are material, tangible, earthly blessings that come from honoring your father and mother, that come from like listening to the good stuff, and also just come straight from God, you know, to where he'll just bless you. He'll bless you because you're seeking to honor him and do what he says in ways that are just beyond what you can even ask or think. And that's true in this life, and in you know, what we do in this life echoes into, you know, all eternity. Like, meaning, like, God has promises to us that eye has not seen and ear has not heard the riches of the glory that God has prepared for those who love him. Meaning, like we're not men who just hope in this life only. Like, we're men who know that we serve the kind of God who will reward those who diligently seek him. And, like, if we seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all these things will be added to you. God will, like, God has eternity prepared for you. It's going to be way better than any of this stuff here and now. Anyways, and so, like, the issue is that there are physical blessings that come from honoring your father and mother. There's spiritual blessings that come from father and mother. And, you know, the job of fathers and mothers is to pass on the most central features of the faith to the next generation. And to the extent to which that's what's actually happening, we're all blessed in that kind of process. And so, here's the thing. You know, as we think about this topic today, you obviously are living in a world that is filled with disrespect. You're living in a world where people despise our elders, despise father and mother, and God has given us a path that's just radically, radically countercultural here today. And I pray that, you know, we absorb these lessons and, with God's help, seek to apply them to his glory and for our good. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for all that you have done for us, and we thank you for your words, which are life to us. We know that you have a plan for us, and we have a plan for the world, and that, you know, the grass withers and the flower fades, but your word abides forever. And we thank you for that. We thank you that you haven't left us in the dark as to the things which are pleasing to you, but you've given us words of life that we can meditate on. And, you know, by the power of your Spirit, through your grace, we can absorb and obey. Lord, we know that without you, we can do nothing. You know, all these things, like none of these truths even matter to a person who has a heart of stone, Lord. And if there's anyone here today who, you know, really doesn't believe in you, doesn't believe in your word, doesn't believe in the scriptures that you've given, I mean, these messages can just sound like foolishness to them, Lord. So we know that we're desperately dependent on you to take any of these things to heart and the work that you've done within us. But we pray that you help us to be more faithful in all of these areas, be more faithful parents, be more faithful children to your glory. In your son's name I pray. Amen.
We are so encouraged that you chose to engage with God's Word on our Provenance podcast. For more biblical teaching, resources, media, and to financially support the mission of Provenance, please visit ProvenanceChurch.com. Until next time, go equip one another to embody humanity's one true purpose.